everybody, how's it going? Thanks for tuning in to the first episode of the State of Wild podcast here in 2022. I appreciate all of your support last year, and as a little bit of a thank you as we wrap up the holidays, we do have some bundles to give away to you guys, courtesy of Blizzard ANZ. It's really easy to enter. All you guys have to do is click that Google form down in the description and pinned comment below. All you gotta do is enter your email. It's free to enter, super simple, and it'll enter you into a couple of drawings for some Battlegrounds and Constructed Wintervail skins. Again, courtesy of Blizzard ANZ. So yeah, don't forget to sign up for that giveaway. Winners will be picked Friday morning Eastern time here in the United States. Again, free to enter, so make sure you guys don't forget. With that being said, I hope you guys enjoy the first episode here of 2022. What's up, y'all? Welcome to the State of Wild, episode 75, a regular YouTube video web series podcast thingy. My name is Meowth, and as usual, I'm joined by my good friends and co-hosts, Raffle and Corbett. How are you guys doing tonight?
You know, I'm doing great. Had a pretty good set of holidays recently, and have been streaming in between, and ready to talk some more Hearthstone with you guys, so glad to be back.
I am, today was the first day that I think I caught up on sleep, basically, since Christmas Eve. I feel really, really good. So I had a very, very fun period over the holidays. It was cool. Took a little break of a Hearthstone and stuff, mostly. But yeah, very happy to be back with you guys talk everything today.
Yeah, I also had a pretty awesome holidays. We unfortunately released our last episode before the holidays, right as they announced a brand new balance patch, so we kind of missed out on all of that for the podcast. But we're here 2 weeks later, and we're going to be talking about all of that and more, so I'm excited to get into it. First podcast of the new year. I'm excited. It's going to be a good year for at least the State of Wild. The podcast, maybe not the format. We'll see. But basically, before we get into all that, one thing hasn't changed. We have to cover all the housekeeping stuff. So first things first, if you guys enjoy the podcast, whether you guys are watching on YouTube or listening on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all that kind of good stuff, if you guys enjoy the podcast, make sure you guys drop a like, comment, and subscribe. It's a small thing, but it does support us a ton.
You can also support the podcast by becoming a patron over at patreon.com/stateofwild. And I'd like to thank Morgan Potter for joining the Patreon at the rare tier.
And of course, when you become a patron, you get a whole bunch of sweet perks when you come join the State of Wild Discord server. And hey, if you're not a patron, it's all good too. Come join the community and just talk all things Hearthstone.
Yeah. So like we mentioned, we released our annual recap review episode. And the moment we dropped that, they revealed a brand new balance patch and launched it the same day. And it was just a little bit awkward timing because we had decided we were going on holidays and weren't recording an episode last week. So, yep, here we are. But now we've had about 2 weeks to experience the balance patch in Wild. So before we like touch on all the intricacies, I just want to highlight everything that was changed because this was a pretty big balance patch. So first thing, Celestial Alignment went from 7 mana to 8. Alliance Bannerman went from 8-2-2 to 8-2-1. Efficient Octobot went from 2 mana to 3. Snowfall Guardian, the 5 mana 3-3 freeze all minions and then gain stats for how many were frozen, went from 5 mana to 6. Touch of the Nathrezim, one of our candidates for strongest warlock cards of the year, finally got nerfed. Now only restores 3 health instead of 4. Ruined Mithril Rod got hit again, pushed to 5 mana from 4. Bloodsail Deckhand, the pirate that discounts your weapon by 1, got its buff reverted, so it's now back to a 2-1. Iron Deep Trog, so the new 1-2 neutral minion from the new set, got nerfed slash reworked. So now instead of summoning a copy of the minion, he now summons a brand new Iron Deep Trog, so he summons a 1-2 vanilla copy, very similar to the Serenite Chain Gang treatment that they had given to that card when it was in standard. Moarg Artificer, so this is the 2 mana 2-4 demon that doubled the damage of spells to minions. This was a very big staple in standard. I know we didn't see this a ton in Wild, so you guys might not know what it does. But it got pushed from 2 mana to 3. And then we had a couple of buffs as well. So Tavish, Beaststalker Tavish, the Hunter Hero card, had its hero power buffed from 3 mana to 2. Gray Sage Parrot, this is the 6 mana parrot for Mage that copies the last spell that costs 5 or more, got buffed from 8 mana to 6. And then Varden, the mage hero card, got buffed to 7 mana and had the base damage of the hero power buffed from 1 to 2. And then kind of a Varden buff, Wildfire got reworked. So when Wildfire originally got released, the effect carried over to new heroes that you played or new hero powers that you gained. And then they figured out that that was a bug, so they changed it. And now they changed it so that's actually how it's supposed to work. So now when you play Varden, when you play Jaina, that Wildfire buff will actually carry over to your new hero power. So a nice little quality of life change there for Wildfire. Okay, huge set of buffs and nerfs. Let's talk about them individually. So let's start all the way back at the very beginning here. Celestial Alignment going from 7 mana to 8. You know, it doesn't seem like a whole lot when you just change 1 mana. But in Wild specifically, you know, that's one turn, right? And that's maybe one turn where you are dying to something like a Pirate Warrior. Or one more turn to get disrupted by a Shaman. So I don't know about you guys, but Celestial Alignment Druid decks have completely disappeared and have just been completely replaced by Wildheart Guff, and now you just ramp to 20 mana and get to play your combo from hand because you don't need to discount a whole bunch of mana because you have 20 to begin with. Celestial Alignment nerf kind of just killed the deck in Wild.
I don't yet know that it killed the deck. I think that's still to be seen. People have been having decent success with, like, you know, different variations of the alignment decks. Like you said, though, like, one mana effectively equals one turn, and giving your opponent an additional turn when without a mana saber on the board, you're already doing that with the alignment turn, really kind of has a big impact for this deck in particular. But I mean, alignment was an incredibly powerful card, and like, the decks were popping off real quickly just because of the druid mana ramp. So I wouldn't be surprised if we started seeing alignment come back soon, but I have definitely been seeing more of the Wildheart Guff, including things like bringing back the Aviana Kun combo with a Juicy Psychomelon, just because you can get to 20 mana, so you can afford to play a 10 mana Aviana, not worry about running like Lightning Bloom or Innervate, and still hit that same combo. I've also been seeing a lot of Linecracker Druids, which, you know, it just needs a little bit of extra mana, so you don't have to run things like Emperor Thorison anymore, and can make use of that. But predominantly, I've been seeing the C'Thun-controlled druid as a druid archetype, and I think that's a legitimate deck for sure. I mean, we've been saying that for a while. I wouldn't be surprised to see it, you know, towards the top of future meta reports.
Yeah, this is a change that I was happy to see. I think I guessed that it was going to 9, so they were a little bit more gentle than I predicted. But, yeah, I don't know if the deck is dead. I think it's hurt a lot, though. Like, and I think Druid was already shifting to those kind of C'Thun and Guff builds that Ruffle was talking about, and this is sort of just, like, one final kind of nudge that'll probably push alignment out a little bit. But, yeah, I mean, it'll be, like, a few percentage worse than it previously was. I think that the alignment builds in Wild can probably hold up a little bit better than the alignment builds in Standard. I know in Standard the alignment nerf has been devastating, whereas I think in Wild it'll be okay, but hey, we have very, very powerful, cool, shiny new toys to play with in Druid for the first time since they printed alignment, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, I have seen a wide variety of just, man, I can't believe I was underselling Guff's impact. Guff, just the ability to unlock mana above 10 is just so powerful because everything has historically been balanced. It's like you only have 10 mana. And when you get to use 20 mana in a turn, or even like 15, you can do some pretty gross things. I haven't personally seen the Aviana Kun things, but I watched Corbett play just like Jade Fatigue Druid because you get to run Guff as like your highest cost card, so you get to tutor it with Coldheart Mine. You just always get Guff, so you always have access to that hero power, and you always have access to ramp, which is pretty gross. I think somebody, if I was remembering correctly, somebody in chat told me somebody hit rank 1 on China with Linecracker Druid just running double Dirty Rats and Linecrackers. You're not even running Oaken Summons anymore, and like, you don't have to rely on Gloop or anything like that now because you get to go to 20 mana. So yeah, I don't know. That's, of all cards, it's really interesting to me that Guff has been the thing that has revolutionized Druid, and then you get to, you know, have this nerf to alignment, which kind of just solidify that, at least popularity-wise, there's no reason for people to play Alignment when they get to play with this new toy in Guff. So,
yeah, even just like the 11th and 12th mana crystal unlocking makes a big difference and allows you to make plays that you just shouldn't. So, yeah, I think we all underestimated that aspect of it. I think we thought that Guff was just going to be a good card because it made Alignment better, but I think it's like a good card on its own, or a gooder card on its own than we all kind of gave it credit for.
Yep. All right, let's talk about Alliance Banana Man. Going from a 3-mana 2-2 to a 3-mana 2-1. So this is technically a nerf, but like, okay, it's also kind of a buff because it now gets drawn off of Solheit's Pride and all of those Paladin decks. I don't think this does anything.
I'm going to go on record and say that it's probably still a nerf. Yeah. You have enough one health minions in your deck that like the drawing it off the Pride isn't that impactful, but you aren't playing the card for the immediate stats anyway. You're playing it for the Battle Cry. There have been a few times where my opponent has played a nerf Banana Man, and because of the stat change, I was able to make a trade that I otherwise wouldn't have, or like a more favorable trade. So like it is impactful, but like it's about as close to even as like a stat change has ever been.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Super negligible, right? It's just one health on a three health card that's not really that relevant, and the fact that you get that tutoring upside off the Pride is just like, yeah, like it's whatever, this is soft. Which is fine, like it's fine. Handbuff didn't really need to like a big change up in Wild as it was. I don't think it's
already taken a lot of collateral damage from the Sins of Standard, so I'm glad that it didn't get hit harder, because I don't think Handbuff is like in that same spot it was when it was nerfed previously. Yeah. So like it's fine where it is.
I hope after it got nerfed six times that it's not in the same place that it was. It puts in the Barons. But yeah, I mean, Banana Man, I mean, you should just be playing it in all of your Paladin decks still, whether you're running Pride or not. Like, if you were running Banana Man before the nerf, you should be running it now. All right, let's talk about Efficient Octobot going from 2-mana to 3. He is now no longer that efficient. To be fair, he was never that efficient in Wild anyways, because nobody was playing him outside of, like, the two people playing Edwin Rogue at High Legend on NA.
I think
doesn't matter really.
The card was like fringe playable in Wild to begin with. Now it's just like probably gone. Like I don't think you can afford to carry a 3-mana 1/4 because your reduction turns happen a turn later. Like it's the same thing with Alignment, but like worse, harder.
I do think that even if the short term it doesn't affect things very much, I do think like it's a door getting completely slammed shut for Rogue and Wild. Like, this was a card that was probably going to be broken at some point in Wild. Like, there was going to be a Garrote Rogue type deck, except faster. Like, there was going to be something like that in Wild at some point, and now that this just isn't a possibility. So it does limit things in the future, I think, for Rogue.
Yeah, wait, so Octobot came out in Barons, right? So it's not even eligible for a revert in 3 months. We got a whole another year. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it'll be some time.
It's one that I could very well see getting reverted, though. Despite what Corb said, I know there's always the fear of that, but like I don't think that, you know, there's anything at that point yet, so I think it's probably a good candidate for a revert unless something changes in the meantime.
Yep. All right, let's talk about something that I think did have a pretty big impact on the format. Let's talk about the Snowfall Guardian. I know when we had done our initial impressions about the expansion, I think 3 weeks ago, we were like, oh my god, this card is busted, we didn't see it coming. Nobody had this in their theory crafts, and it was like Free Shaman was terrorizing the meta, right? Everybody was like, this is the new tier 1 tier S deck. You know, it turns out it was also broken in Standard, and it has now been nerfed from 5 mana to 6. And I actually think that this change, like Alignment, like Octobot, this 1 mana change is actually so significant. I think even more for this Free Shaman deck, because it is so powerful and was kind of your win con a lot of the time, and it coming down a turn later, super, super impactful. And at least, I don't know if the power level has drastically decreased of the archetype itself, but it does feel like people have this perception that the deck is a lot less powerful, because it's at least a lot less popular, at least in Legend.
Yeah. So, that's what I had heard too. And then the day that I heard that, I queued into like 35 to 40% Free Shaman at like mid tier Legend. So I think people are coming back to it now a little bit more and realizing that, yeah, the nerf hurts, but the deck was still good. And, I mean, you say you're slowing it down a turn, but, like, I played this card recently, and I found that I was holding it a little bit just to, like, wait for the macaw anyway to make sure that I actually had a good setup. Because, like, a single Snowfall Guardian can win some games, but it doesn't win like every game. You need a follow-up sometimes, and so I don't know, there are times when because I was running a silly cost reduction build with a lot of elementals, there's times where I was holding it in hand anyway, even though it was playable, just because like I didn't need to play it and there was no real upside to playing it. So I mean, it was still more often than not my win condition, but like it just wasn't necessary to play it on curve in most situations. So I think the deck is still strong. The nerf is going to hurt because there are going to be situations where I absolutely need this card on five or I lose because like Pirate Warrior exists. And that was one of the things that I think propelled Free Shaman towards the top, is that it had a heavily favored matchup in the Pirate Warrior. That matchup becomes worse. Like obviously the deck becomes worse given the popularity of Pirate Warrior. So I still think it's a good card and a good deck though.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the best card in Shaman. Like, depending on you, if you just want to view the Murloc package as, like, one thing, I think the Snowfall is still, like, the busted thing in Shaman. But that doesn't mean it didn't have an impact, right? Like, it still impacts things a little bit. It's just, like, the more a card doesn't need to be played on curve, the less the one mana change matters. And Snowfall is so good on turn 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Like, whenever you actually play your Guardian, it's the nuts. And you tend to, like, float mana anyway if you really need to. And so, it's still the best card in Shaman. Shaman's still very, very good, but it probably did knock it down like a percent or two, which, yeah. To be fair, it needed. Like, it was kind of a little bit of a problem in Wild, so, yeah.
I think to your point, the card and the effect is so good that if you are forced to float mana now because it costs more, like, so what? You still did the powerful thing, right? Yeah. It's almost like an ice block, if we're being real, like in the way that it just kind of buys you a turn. So like if you're just buying that turn anyway, sure.
Yeah. I will say it, in my experience, I've been playing a lot of Free Shaman post patch, and it really hurts the Pirate Warrior matchup more than anything.
Yeah.
Like
I was gonna mention that one specifically. Yeah.
Yeah, that one turn is actually so relevant because like once they get that Juggernaut down, you are still on a clock, even if you do have that Snowfall Guardian kind of set up because of Cannoneers and the Juggernaut shots itself, because you can't freeze the face. And so you are still on a clock, and so that one extra turn of damage actually is super relevant. And so it really does hurt that Pirate Warrior matchup, and I mean, we can maybe talk about how powerful Pirate Warrior is, but when you are hurting that one specific matchup, I think pretty significantly. I think it does take it that, at least it takes Free Shaman, even if Snowfall Guardian's still good and that deck is still good, I think it takes it out of that conversation of being one of the best decks in the format to just like a really good deck, which is huge, right, when we're talking about where this deck was potentially 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, I'm still pretty high on the deck, and maybe like my experience is skewed a little bit by the fact that I don't know. I was just thinking back. I don't think I played this card at five mana. So maybe I'm just actually coming to the realization of how strong this card is and was now that it's six mana. So it's like, well, it's broken. What are you guys talking about? So maybe that's my confusion, is that like I didn't actually get to experience it prior to the nerf.
Yeah, you missed out on some broken Hearthstone right there with that 5-mana Snowfall Guardian. All right, let's go on and talk about some Warlock cards here. Let's talk about first Touch of the Nathrezim. I mean, we've been talking forever about how this card has just been absolutely busted. It does a lot for 1 mana. Turns out that the devs finally saw the light. They finally agreed, decided to nerf Touch of the Nathrezim, knocked it down from 4 health restoration on kill to 3. I mean, right now, because of the presence of stuff like Odd Hunter and Free Shaman specifically, and stuff like Ignite Mage, I don't think we've seen a whole lot of Darkleer Warlock or Arena Lock very much at all. And so that touch nerf, while it does hurt, you're not seeing a ton of it. And I think you should still play it in those decks if you are playing those decks. But because we're not seeing those decks, so we're not seeing that card, I don't know how big of an impact it had.
probably less impactful than the Banana Man change. Like, it's still not really good. I don't know, man.
I played some Megathune Warlock with it recently, and yeah, you notice it, but like, I don't know. Like, there are so many healing effects in Warlock that it's just like, well, I'll manage anyway. It's still a very good card. I was thinking this could go to two. And maybe even deal one, heal two would be like a fine card. I think it still does too much. Like, two damage is a lot. And then healing three is still a lot. Like, you compare that to, that's a two mana card. I don't know. That's still a two mana card in my mind.
All right. Let's combine this conversation, though, with Rune Myth or Rod. So it is still absolutely mind blowing that this card was printed at three mana, by the way, because it got nerfed again from four to five. And I'm going to be honest with you guys, I played a lot of Mechathune post-patch. I still think Mithril Rod at 5 is kind of busted. In the matchups where you care about that mana discount, right, against stuff like Shaman, the card's still absolutely insane. The fact that this 5 mana card can discount you like 18 to 20 mana is pretty gross. And I think it's still, like, it is still maybe one of the worst cards in Mechathune Warlock because it is 5 mana pass. But it's still a very, very good card in that deck. And I don't know. It still blows my mind that this doesn't just discount the cards that you drew. Like the four cards you drew with Mithril Rod, kind of like the Demon Hunter quest. So, Mithril Rod's still good.
No. It's not one of the worst cards in Mechathune Lock, even after the nerf. Like I had this argument with my Twitch chat because I ran into some really unfortunate matchups just like off the bat. It was nothing but Ignite Mages and Odd Hunters, and so I was just getting kind of wrecked and I didn't really get a situation to set the Rune Mithril Rod. And you know, chat was telling me that the card's just bad now. It's five mana. It's bad. I checked the stats. It's still got one of the highest drawn win rates in the deck. It's one of the best cards in the deck. You keep this card. You play it on 5, you coin it on 4, and it's like you make up so much ground with the cost reduction if you follow it with a backfire or anything like that, that like if you're in a position where you can stomach a 5 mana pass, you're probably winning that game. And like, you can set yourself up with removal even against Pirate Warrior to give yourself a turn where you can 5 mana pass. So you just have to be smart with the turns prior to it, but it is absolutely still one of the best cards in the deck. I'm not as high on Mechathune Warlock as I know some people are, and certainly were prior to the nerf. But like, this card is still very good, and once again, I don't think it'll ever go back to 3 mana, but I could see it going back to 4 when it rotates. Like, that's another decent candidate for a revert. But like, it's still a good card at 5 mana. Like, compared to Emperor Thorsen, when you're like, I don't know, it can't be removed as easily because trades don't happen, and you usually get the two turns of cost reduction that like makes a huge difference.
Yeah, Mithril Rod, like the 5 mana pass does hurt in my opinion. Like I do think that like the fact that it is just so slow is damaging in WoW, but it's also the card that enables the entire deck to work, right? Like, you can't play Mechathune Warlock without Rod. Rod just enables so much, and it would completely collapse if you don't have the Rod. And so it is kind of like a core piece, and when it does work, right, then it's completely bonkers. Like, even if you 5 mana pass, you just recover so often. So I thought the deck was going to die. Like, I thought Mechathune was not going to be able to stomach this. I thought it was going to be way too much. I thought the card was going to be terrible, and it's just not. Like, Mechathune Warlock, the stats on the deck are still bonkers. Absolutely insane. Which is shocking to me. I don't understand how it survived, but it just has. This deck is really, really good, I think, and it's still super underplayed, because people don't really typically like to play nerfed decks, but I mean, It's still busted, and I really don't want to see it go to 4. And I kind of imagined thinking back that it was 3 mana.
And out of the gates, it didn't see a lot of play.
Yeah, like, we didn't play it in Dark Label, like in the Giants deck, but we did play it in the Fatigue version, and it was even more busted in that one.
But that only came like after the Dark Lair, I think, nerf, when people started moving away from Dark Lair. So it's like, it took some time for people to realize just how broken this card was in Wild, when like, it does a lot of things, and that's a big oversight.
I mean, I will say, like, the outside of the kind of auto losses for Mechathune Warlock when it comes to Odd Hunter and Ignite Mage, The only matchup where you like can't really afford to do 5-mana pass is against Pirate Warrior. But against Pirate Warrior, you have so much removal and so much healing anyways that you don't need the Rod. You're kind of just playing Control Warlock at that point until you can finally set up the Rod draw engine later on in the game. So I don't even know how much it hurts in that specific matchup outside of just like having a card you really don't want to play if you don't have to. I don't know.
Honestly, like, okay, this is, I queued into a lot of Pirate Warriors with the deck when I was playing it, and it's just like, I just hold my Defile for a turn and like let them overextend a little bit farther. So I just get greedy with my removal and like basically turn four Defile into, you know, they develop maybe a few things and turn five Rod and it's fine. Like a lot of times after I Defile too, like they'd have already have hand dumped. So I'm just like, I'm just eating an Ankar swing or something like that. So the, like you can read the situation, or like even at a point like the Rokara turn isn't that threatening. Yeah, it's a 7/7 coming at you, but you got Plague of Flames behind it and something like that. So like they take a turn off for the Rokara. Why can't you take a turn off for the Rod? So I don't know. I didn't feel like it hurt that much, but like just because the other cards in the deck were carrying so much of the burden during that matchup. That I didn't like. I had almost every game. I made a point of saying something because I like almost every game against Pirate Warrior, I drew double Rod, and I was still just like, sure, like yeah, these other cards are pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, we could just lump this in with all these nerfs that we were talking about, right? Snowfall Guardian, Touch of the Nathrezim, Alliance Bannerman. Of like, yeah, I mean, these cards are still really freaking good, and you should probably still be playing them, even if you know. So, I mean, speaking of another card that you probably. I swear, if you're not playing this in your Pirate Warriors because it got nerfed, we're going to have some words because it was really good before it even got buffed. We're talking about Blood Cell deck, and it was originally a 2-1, got buffed to a 2-2, and now we're back to a 2-1. I'm not necessarily sure about the arc of Pirate Warrior in Standard. It was interesting to me that this got buffed and then eventually nerfed, but I mean, we're back at pre-buff deckhand, and pre-buff deckhand was still really freaking good. The only thing is it makes it a little bit easier to clear in the mirror, right? And a little bit easier for those Odd Hunters to ping them off. But outside of that, card's still absolutely busted.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to run a one-mana pirate with just about any stats in Wild right now just because it allows you to rush down the quest. This has a good effect still in that it makes your Ankar cheaper. And like a 2-1 is still kind of premium stats on a one drop when it has an effect anyway, so it's like, yeah, I'm happy they recognized that like maybe it was a little bit too much to buff this alongside the cannoneer, or with the cannoneer following shortly, and like it started even, you know, making waves in Standard is the reality of why it got hit. So I'm okay with them you know, taking a light touch early or being willing to admit that maybe an earlier change was a mistake. So I'm happy to have it back. I don't know. It's not super impactful, but it's definitely a worse card.
So was that the third revert we've seen along with LPG and extra arms? Like mm-hmm. Before rotation, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so. It was just like buffs and then we made mistakes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, again, it doesn't move the needle for Pirate Warrior at all, right? Like, it's still one of the best cards in the deck. All right, let's talk about Iron Deep Trog. I'm so sad. I hate the standard to this. I know. It's still really good, but it used to be amazing, you know? It used to be amazing. It got the Serenite Chain Gang treatment. Now, instead of summoning a copy, it summons a brand new 1-2 Trog. I mean, like Corbett just kind of mentioned, still a really good card. It just snowballs a lot less, right? Which makes it worse in our format, okay? I know it's still a really good card in Standard. It's honestly still a really, really good card in Wild. At least, I think it's been good in Hand Buff Paladin. Like, I've still enjoyed it in Hand Buff Paladin. I haven't really messed with it elsewhere, but I am a little bit sad because it was really only seeing play in a select few decks. It wasn't a very widespread oppressive thing, at least in our format. So I was a little bit sad to see it go.
Yeah. That said, as much as I hate the decks that it beats, like, I don't know that a singular one drop should, like, just win the game like that. You know, that's why we got rid of Mana Worm. That's why Tunnel Trog was despised for so long. So, yeah, it was good for a period in reining some of those decks in. I think it's still good against those decks. And so it just doesn't, like, make people concede on one.
I think Trog is almost underplayed right now in Wild, in a lot of stuff. Like, I didn't know, like, how good it was going to be, right? Like, I didn't know. But before that, it was, like, the best card almost in Aggro Druid. It was, like, just slightly worse than Drekthar. It was, like, busted in Paladin. It was busted in a lot of stuff. And, I mean, right now it should probably still be going into things like Shadow Priest. Is something that people aren't really thinking about or doing very much, but it's still disgusting. It's still really good when, you know, two of the premier decks are quest decks, which are obviously things that do struggle with it, particularly on the coin, like if you just drop the Trog on one. And so, yeah, really good card is still really, really good and probably just a bit too underplayed in Wild right now.
Yeah, I think Shadow Priest is a good shout. But, like, that's somewhere I didn't think to put there, but it makes total sense. And, like,
yeah, I've been running Cult Neophyte, and that's like, why wasn't I just running Trog? Like, if I wanted to try and beat up Hunter or something, or whatever.
Yeah, and, like, I don't know, it just gives you options or a little bit of redundancy between those two, and, like, it's very good still in Tax Paladin, even if you're not getting the explosive, like, buffed copies of it. It's still, like, you're kind of just doing incremental damage until you get your burst anyway, so you don't really need, like, I don't know, huge swings as often as it used to grant.
Yeah. I will still be sad, even if it's still really good. I will always remember what once was when it comes to the Trog.
It's like the Grab Rider change, if we're going to be honest. Like, yeah. It was doing good work, but it was like too strong of a card. That's, I think, where I'm at with it.
Yeah. I mean, I accept the rework, and I knew that it was probably needed. It still doesn't make me any less sad, you know? It was still my baby for a couple of days there. Even though I didn't believe in it, I will say I didn't believe in it. But I fell in love with it very, very quickly. Anyways, let's talk about the last nerf here. A card that I don't think we ever really talked about in Wild. We had Moarg Artificer. So this is a 2-mana 2/4 that amplified spell damage, right? It doubled damage. It was kind of a staple in standard Demon Hunter and Warlock decks because of stuff like Drain Soul, Touch, and then, like, the Lifesteal Demon Hunter stuff. I don't think I've ever seen a Moarg Artificer in Wild, and I think after this change, I definitely won't see a Moarg Artificer in Wild, so unless you guys want to butt in with anything, I think we can go ahead and move on to some buffs here. Let's start with Beastalker Tavish, having that hero power go from a 3-mana summon a random animal companion to 2-mana, and oh my god, it's so much better at 2, especially in a deck like Even Hunter, where you get those discounts and you get to play it twice with Garrison Commander. It's a good hero card, dude. You should be playing it in your Secret Hunters, your Even Hunters, your Reno Hunters. Like, this card is absolutely busted. And I love it, dude. I love it. It's so good.
The only bad thing I have to say about this card is that it just kind of pushed Rexxar out of, like, any conversation because, like, it's just better. It's just, especially with the speed of the metagame right now, like, even in Reno Hunter just wants to kill him, and like, Tavish does a much better job of killing him than Rexxar ever did. So
I love Tavish. Like, I love Tavish. It's one of my favorite hero cards. It's actually one of my favorite cards that I think was printed out this year. Like, I just really like it. I think it's just really, really cool, and I'm very happy they buffed it. I mean, I was already playing it in Even Hunter and having a great time, but it makes such a big difference. Like, you set me up, like, the Garrison Commander in particular, because it's a 2-mana swing, you know? Like, that's huge for the same effect. So, like, it's so nasty now what you're able to do with Garrison and, you know, even with things like Facetalker, and it just feels so much nicer.
I mean, you guys are saying this, but, like, my opponents just kind of died the turn after Tavish came out, so I don't know what you were playing against. Where, like, how did you get these beautiful setups with, like, Garrison Commanders and Fellfire Deadeyes? They were just dead. What are you talking about?
I don't know. Shoutouts to Otters. I have to do this on in a much more public setting here. I have to do it to them. No. I was I was playing my THL match against Otters this week, and I brought Even Hunter, and we were in game five. I think it was Even Hunter versus the Free Shaman builds, and he had set up that Snowfall Guardian kind of lockout with Macaws, but I had played a Tavish, and my off of Tavish, I had summoned Open the Cages off of like his Battlecry.
Yeah.
And so I had I summoned a Huffer. He froze it with Snowfall Guardian. I summoned another Huffer. He froze it with Macaw. And then Open the Cages propped. I top decked a Garrison Commander. And I hero powered twice and summoned two more Huffers. And so it was the most beautiful thing that I've ever done. And I'm sorry, Otters, to do this to you publicly. But I will also say, you started off this conversation with saying you're a little bit sad that it pushed out Rexxar. I'm very glad that there's now a very clear reason to not run Rexxar, because I was very tired of having this conversation with Twitch chat about, like, dude, why don't you run Rexxar in your Even Hunter builds, you know? Because now there's a very clear answer. There's just a much better option.
That's true. You do make better decks, but, like, Rexxar is one of the most fun cards in
I will concede that he's a very fun card. But summoning five Huffers in a row is also really fun. So
I know. But, like, honestly, Rexxar was not even a good card in Reno Hunter. I just did it so that I didn't have to answer those questions about... like, where's Rexxar? But, like, you just want to shoot him in the face. Like, Rexxar doesn't shoot him in the face is quite as good. So, yeah, it's kind of a no-brainer at this point. Tavish just kills him.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about Gray Sage Parrot. I know Corb has some attachment to this one. Buff from an 8-mana 6/6, I believe, to a 6-mana 4/5. Again, you don't care about the stats because it is now 6-mana, which means you get to do dumb things with Gray Sage Parrot even faster in the game. And so I'm just going to defer over here to Corb, the master of degenerate mage decks, because I know you've been playing a lot with Parrot.
Oh, yeah. This lets you play so many puzzle blocks. No, it lets you play Time Warp, like, over and over and over, and it's freaking awesome. Like, Parrot Mage is something that I was actually experimenting with before the buff. Like, I was already on board with the 8-mana Parrot. Nops is a player who sent me a deck. But with the buff, it's actually, like, kind of a real deck. Like, it's still a little bit of a meme, but I had a really, really good win rate with this. The plan is to obviously just play Time Warp, and then you play, like, you get your extra turn, then you play Parrot, and then you get another extra turn, and then you bounce the Parrot with Potion of Illusion, then you get another extra turn, and then you keep bouncing it, and you keep playing it, and you get infinite turns, and then eventually the opponent blows up. It's very, very cool. If you ever want to BM, like, this is the evolution of, I don't know, what's it called? Torture Shaman? Like, you know, forgot the name of Hostage Shaman. Yeah, it's kind of like something like that. You know, you can trap your opponent in the game for 12 turns. Super cool. Very happy about this change. And I mean, it's just sweet. Like, this card's kind of disgusting when it gets to play Time Warp. So I've had a lot of fun with this one.
Yeah, I had also played that quite a while ago, well prior to the nerf. I think shortly after the card was even released, and like, there are awkward situations where you did just kind of have to sit back and let your block get popped because you didn't have the mana to play the Parrot on the next turn. So there's like, what's the point of getting extra turns? Or you had to like wait to go off with your apprentice just because, like, again, the Parrot is the thing that keeps it going. So this is a huge difference because you can just basically go off on curve. You can do 5-mana combo turn. You're basically just comboing with a bunch of apprentices and then evocation, so you don't have like a heavy investment in cards that are created by or generating, and then I don't know, you just follow it up with a Parrot and win. Like, it's a pretty low ask. There's also kind of a cute interaction where even if you reduce the cost of the Open the Way get, it still gets replayed, and then you just never play a spell that isn't, you know, 5-mana or more, and you don't necessarily even have to play the Parrot immediately following the Time Warp. You can just take your extra turn, draw the Parrot, draw your potions, and go off from there. But yeah, I haven't played it since the buff, but like, the deck seemed pretty good prior to the buff. I can only imagine it got better because it's able to get online a lot quicker.
Yeah, I think we need to be clear here. This is not like Ignite Mage level tier, or even like Mazaki Mage or APM Mage. It's significantly worse than that. But it is much more fun.
Is it worse than Mazaki though?
I think Mazaki? It's probably worse because, you know,
I'm not sure. I had a really good win rate with it. I had a really good win rate with this deck. Like, it was one of my best performing decks in the month. I only played like about 40 games with it, but I think I was like 66% or something.
Yeah,
before I dropped it.
I don't think it's like you're comboing about as quickly as Mizaki Mage, and you like have, in my opinion, fewer dead cards. Like, I don't know.
Don't scare the listeners like this, and don't scare me like this. Don't tell me this deck is good.
I think at worst it's like it's much better than meme tier. Like it's a real deck. How much better? I don't know. Like, no one's really playing it, so it's kind of hard to say. But I had a lot of fun. I won a lot of games. You should go out and, you know, skip your opponent's turns to infinity as well. Listener, it'd be great.
Yeah. And you can play spells that do cost more than 5. After you've taken 12 turns and you're in the midst of BMing your opponent, and then you try to kill them with a puzzle box, and then you can play a couple pairs after that to try to keep puzzle boxing them.
Right.
Just make sure you've taken like 7 or extra, or you've banked like 7 or 8 turns, so just in case the puzzle box really goes wrong, you have a buffer.
So toxic.
I played this deck, and yeah, absolutely, I generated as many extra turns as possible, but I still just like killed them. You only need like 2 or 3 extra turns because you're still hitting them with it. Well, it was a 6/6 at the time. Now it's still a 5/4 or 4/5/6. Jeez, numbers. Doesn't matter. It's repetitive damage over the course of like you only need like 4 extra turns. You can generate like 12 or I don't care. Do as many as you want. Just like you'll kill them eventually.
Yeah. All right, and the last set of buffs to talk about here, though, another set of mage buffs. The Varden hero card, Magister Dawngrasp, got buffed from 8 mana to 7, and also had the base damage of the hero power increased from 1 to 2. And then let's combine that with the Wildfire, because they obviously had like an archetype that they wanted to push here. They finally wanted to make hero power mage a thing in Standard. So the Wildfire effect, like I mentioned when we were going through these nerfs and buffs originally, when Wildfire came out, it did carry over to the new hero powers. Right? I remember Jaina hero powers that were dealing 2 or 3 damage. And then they were like, this is a bug, we're going to fix it. And then they realized that it made Wildfire just like not a very enjoyable card to play. And so they kind of reverted that. And so now it's really interesting, the interaction with Varden, because Varden will recast that Wildfire as its fire spell. So you'll play a Varden and your hero power will be dealing like 4 or 5 damage. And then whenever you honorably kill, it banks even more damage as well. But yeah, I don't know about you guys. I have played a little bit of Hero Power Mage. As much of a meme as it's become in the WoW community, in certain circles, the deck's actually not terrible. Like, the deck is very good at board control because of stuff like Reckless Apprentice, the 2-mana 2/3, the Snow Flurry, if I'm remembering that correctly. Like you do a significant amount of board control, and then that damage with Magister Dawngrasp actually ramps up super quickly. Like, I was playing some Reno Hero Power Mage with double Wildfire, so not really a Reno deck, but also a Reno deck. And even in that deck, I was playing a Varden, and all of a sudden I was doing 2-mana deal 5, 2-mana deal 7. And when you have a freaking fireball as your hero power every turn, and then you play something like a Reckless Apprentice, it's pretty gross, pretty quick. So, like, I think there's potential there, but because this is, like, a standard archetype, I don't think it's going to have a whole lot of potential just yet in our format, because I think it's going to be limited by the power level in Standard. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't tried it yet. I did see people have been getting decent ranks both in Wild and Standard. I haven't played Hero Power Mage, but I have played some Odd Mage, and I actually did really well with the deck. One thing that interests me that Magister Dawngrasp does is it just gives you a third copy of Ice Block. So I was farming APM mages and odd hunters that were losing their minds with their flares. I don't know why they were playing them when they did, but they did. And the other thing that it like allowed me to do in Odd Hunter at least is, yeah, I got the extra Wildfire play, but I don't think I ever hero powered after I played Magister Dawngrasp, because I just made the opponent die with a Mask of C'Thun, and that was like a thing that's allowed now. So there's like basically I would just set Ice Blocks ping face when I was just Odd Mage, and then set a Magister Dawngrasp to give me another Ice Block and do a bit of burst. But I don't know, it just feels like less bad playing. I think Wildfire, when it was released, you know, it didn't really matter all that much. Yeah, like, the only interaction that it changed was with Jaina, and that was wild specific. And the card text didn't do what it said that it did. People liked it better, so I'm glad that they changed it, and I'm especially glad that they changed it in conjunction with the buff to Magister Dawngrass, just because it, like, the buff to Magister Dawngrass just would feel really bad if you didn't get to keep the work that you did in the beginning part of the game. So I think it definitely has the potential to make it a real deck, and I think the people are having reasonable success with the archetype in both Wild and Standard, so I think that there is legitimately some potential there.
It does feel nice that, like, some of these underperforming hero cards were buffed, because, you know, if you like a certain class, it feels like 7 out of the 10 classes or something kind of got this hallmarked, like, absolutely busted centerpiece, best card in your deck, and then you were, like, Mage. And then, or you were, like, Warrior. And I guess Warrior is, like, the one left over right now who might need a little bit of a nudge, potentially. But, you know, like, I think it's great that the Vaan is, you know, a super, super strong thing for people that are interested in Hero Power Mage. And, hey, there's a lot of people playing it in Standard. Even for a deck that isn't Stellar, the buffs obviously worked, because that deck is really popular in Standard right now.
Yeah, it's really interesting to me the transition of Hero Power Mage used to be even Mage specific, right? Because we had 2-mana Wildfire and we had Mordresh at 10. And now we've completed this transition to, is Hero Power Mage an odd Mage thing in Wild now? Because you have Varden, you have 7-mana Janala, you have now 1-mana Wildfire.
I mean, it's just whatever mana Wildfire costs me out. Like, yeah, we just follow that direction.
Fair enough. But it's just funny to me that over the life cycle of Wildfire, it's the shift in how we build the deck has been very interesting to me. All right, so yeah, we've been talking for a little bit because this was a huge balance patch. I mean, I think the balance patch, I don't know about you guys, at least in Standard, was a very successful balance patch. I don't know how impactful it was for Wild, because Celestia Alignment decks got worse, but they're replaced with Guff Druid, right? So it's not like you were losing out on that whole significant archetype. And then, like, Ruined Mithril Wad made Mechathune a little bit worse. But all the other changes kind of, the decks are still the same, right? Their power level might have shifted just a little bit because of the nudge in numbers, but it didn't really feel like it shook up the meta a whole bunch in Wild.
Yeah, I think for the most part, like, it didn't affect Wild all that much, because that wasn't the goal of the balance change. I think that the reality is that they're kind of on a tight timeline, or they had an abbreviated window of when they could release this, and I'm surprised that it came out prior to the end of the year, just because they had the World Championship and then holidays immediately following that. And like we talked about, like, you know, holidays at any corporate office are kind of a ghost town where you have fewer people actually working because they're, you know, spending the holiday with their family. So, like, I was surprised to see it, and especially surprised to see it in this amount. And I think that's part of why we saw a lot of these just kind of be numbers changed, because, you know, we've talked in the past about how localization can be a little bit more time consuming and effortful than just, like, changing numbers on cards. So I think that that's why we were able to get the changes that we got in that narrow window of time that we could possibly get them, I guess.
I mean, so let's just break it down. We've had 2 weeks since the patch to kind of let the meta settle here, and I know we've talked about how not much has shifted, but I guess just for the listeners that are not super in tuned or playing ladder a ton, I do want to talk a little bit about, I don't want to call this a tier list, but kind of what we think are the best decks in the format right now. We don't have to order them or anything like that. I know. I set myself up to be.
Yeah, I gotcha. Yeah, not a tier list, meow.
I'm setting myself up for this, but to get right. yelled at. But basically, like, what do we think are the best decks in the format, right? Like, is Free Shaman, Mechathune Warlock, are these decks still in that same tier as stuff like Pirate Warrior and Odd Hunter? And what about decks like Evenlock that didn't get a whole lot of love and were kind of being phased out because stuff like Free Shaman was so popular? How are we feeling about the best decks in the format? I'm just going to embrace it. What are the best decks? Top tier decks?
The best decks are kind of what you expect, kind of the same best decks for some time now. It's Odd Hunter, it's Pirate Warrior, it's Even Warlock, it's Shadow Priest, Mechathan Warlock, I think is something that's really good that people are underplaying right now, but this held up. Free Shaman, Hand Buff Paladin, and I think that's seven. I don't think, I'm not sure if I forgot one, but there's like seven
I would put Cthulhu up in there, right?
I think it's a little bit worse.
Really?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit worse. But it's still pretty good. Just, yeah, a little bit worse. Oh, Ignite Mage. I forgot Ignite Mage. That deck's really, really good. God damn it. yeah. But I think those are the main seven. I think there are a whole bunch of like Drekthar decks that are pretty solid that people aren't that interested in because they're just like aggro decks with Drekthar and no one... Like, they're not amazing, but there's like, you know, like Aggro Paladin, for example, I think is something that's quite solid that people aren't using a lot. I think like even like Aggro Druid with Drekthar is probably fine. But those are the big like seven that come to mind when I think about the best decks in the format.
Yep. All right. And I know... Basically, I ask you that because, and I brought it up to transition to our next point here. There was a point in setting myself up to get yelled at. We talked about how this balance patch didn't really change a whole lot in Wild, and people were frustrated, as people always are, every time we get a balance patch that doesn't affect the Wild format. We can maybe talk about expectations, because it feels like every time we do see people getting frustrated that there aren't any changes, even though...
Yeah.
We can go there, but I do want to bring up these tweets because I think it's a really, really interesting conversation topic here. So, Cora, she's now a game designer for Hearthstone. She put out a response, a tweet to a question about Wild change, right? So Engine, a Wild Hearthstone streamer, asked the question, did you discuss any Wild changes this time? We just like confirmation that we're on the radar. So Cora replies, we did. We waffled a bit on a few different changes, and we're going to revisit things in the new year if the standard changes we made don't affect Wild enough. So that first part of her first tweet, it's the same old, it's the same thing that we always hear. It's the usual, right? But then that very last part, Warlock and Mage in particular are on our radar, which kind of threw a whole lot of people for a loop. Because if you talk or think about what people are complaining about, power level wise in our format, Warlock and Mage aren't really it, right? We're talking about Hunter, Warrior, and maybe some people are complaining about Shaman as like the three big bad, but she mentioned Warlock and Mage in particular. She then follows up, I'll clarify, everything is on our radar. Warlock and Mage are consistently powerful. Hunter, Shaman, and Warrior are very good right now as well. We'll see if the balance changes skew numbers at all, and if they don't, we'll reassess. Okay, so first things first, set expectations. This is not any confirmation of changes are coming. Okay, just put that out there. But I do want to talk a little bit about this, the statement that I just brought up. Warlock and Mage in particular are on our radar. So yeah. Let's start with Warlock, because I think in the history of Wild Hearthstone, the vast majority of broken decks have been tied to the Warlock class in some way, somehow, right? Not only is Lifetap completely busted, but Warlock does have access to a lot of removal, a lot of card draw, right, and a lot of healing, which kind of sets it up as like this premier combo class in our format. And then she brings up Mage as like just cards that are consistent, or a class that's very consistently powerful. I'm not sold on this part of Mage being consistently powerful, but I am on this page of Mage is consistently a problem for the community. People do not like playing against Mage combo decks that are super popular, even if they're not super powerful, right? Quest Mage, Reno Quest Mage, APM Mage, Ignite Mage, for example, okay? And so what this means to me is that we might see some balance changes the next time that they do a Wild balance patch, just kind of related to, hey, let's fix some of the long issues in, or long-standing issues in Wild as a way to kind of just prefix anything that might break in the future. I don't know if I'm reading too far into this, but that's kind of how I took Cora's response here.
I think you might be reading a little bit too much into it. I think that we're not that far out from like having 2 to 3 very good Warlock decks, you know, at that were top tier. That like, it's not really until Shaman came along that kind of bullied them out that they weren't there. And we've had you know, well over a year of Warlock dominance, it feels like. So, like, I think it's just maybe a response to that. Maybe their internal data not catching up to some of the player experiences from Fractured and Alteric Valley, because if we're talking, you know, United and Stormwind, this isn't too far off, other than maybe Hunter Warrior missing, which were included in the clarification tweet. So I think it's just more that, I don't know, they're potentially problematic, or decks that they find problematic, or I don't think we should read too much into two classes being isolated. I was initially confused by it, but then it's just like, I don't know, the clarifying tweet, I feel like, tweet below that kind of clears the skies on that, in my opinion.
Yeah, I suppose, like, even if there is the clarifying tweet, the fact that there's even need for a clarifying tweet is kind of interesting to me. Like Cora did mention those two specific classes, even if she did follow up after there's a lot of response to those tweets, or to that tweet, it still did sort of make me raise my eyebrow a little bit. I think with Warlock, I think Mechathon Warlock was actually much, much more busted than people thought. It was something that I was kind of catching up to right before the nerfs. Like, I kept on looking at the Hades replay stuff, and I kept on thinking, oh, wow, Mechathon Warlock's actually really, really good. And then, like, it was even better than I thought. Like, I think it might have just been far and away the best thing in the format before the rod change, which, again, wasn't something that I was really thinking at the time. So maybe that was sort of the Warlock thing, and then whereas Mage has kind of got some huge play pattern issues right now. I don't know, there's kind of some interesting stuff here that the Core brought up. Like talking about how Mage is consistently powerful. Like, that's true, but Mage has had powerful decks that have been very distinct and don't have almost any overlapping cards a lot of the time when talking about its best archetypes. So, like, whether you're talking about Reno Quest Mage into Secret Mage into Ignite Mage, they probably totally share like three cards, like between three entire 90 card lists. Like, there's not very much overlap at that point, so it's not really about like Mage being a consistent problem, I don't think. Otherwise, they would be addressing specific cards. The Warlock thing is sort of a little bit more interesting to me, because Warlock does have the same removal and draw kit that is used every single time there's a problematic deck, and whether that's addressing something like Kobold Librarian specifically, or I don't know, like Defile, or I'm not exactly sure, because it is such a strange comment to me, given like what Meowth was saying, the current situation with things like Hunter and Warrior and Shaman. So I think it's something where you can read into it if you want to read into it. But as always, I expect no balance changes to Wild, and if I get some, then I'm going to be a happy lad.
I will say that's the same response that a lot of people are going to have, right? Like, they don't expect anything, but if something happens, they'll be really happy. But I also think there's a very small percentage of the population that, like, I feel like I want to have this conversation about expectations, because it feels like every time we have to have this conversation of, like, I don't know why you're expecting wild changes every time they do a balance patch, because that's just not what they've ever done. I think we can have this conversation of whether it's something that they should do, and we've had this conversation on the podcast multiple times, so I don't really want to hop into it again today, but like, I don't, berating devs and stuff like that on Twitter and on Reddit, it's just, every time that there's a balance patch, feels very, I don't know, out of place to me.
Engine raising the question, like, hey Cora, did you talk about Wild? Did it come up? Like, I think that's totally fine, but which is a very different situation than, you know, they need to be doing changes. They should have already done changes. Why aren't they doing changes? Like, I expected changes, because there's no good reason to expect changes, even if it's something that they did discuss.
Yeah, and I think in this situation in particular, like, I don't know, we raised this point, you know, the week prior to the nerfs actually, or changes actually coming out, that, like, you shouldn't expect any changes just until the new year, because of the holidays and they're on a tight timeline. Like, more than ever, their focus was on making sure that Standard was in a good place before going on break. Yeah. And so that was probably where all of their attention was. And, like, so it, and again, that's why we only saw numbers being changed in those nerfs, is because they needed something that they could deliver pretty quickly. And, you know, unfortunately, that means wild changes weren't a part of that. But, like, again, it's they're going to be coming back into the office. They're going to have some more data based on any of the changes, and maybe the conversations will come up again. But again, I feel like it's, I don't know, it feels like Groundhog Day to me, that like yeah. every single time that there's a balance change, everyone or a substantial portion of the wild community is like, where wild changes? And it's like, well, you've been here before. Like, we've all been here before. We're through the, yeah. you know, like, why, at a certain point, like it or not, you kind of do need to shift your expectations, because I don't
like you are setting yourself up for disappointment, right?
Right, like, exactly. You are setting, and, but yeah. but I feel like that disappointment just ends up manifesting itself in aggression, and that's mm-hmm. that's where yeah. it becomes a problem. Is like it, you're mad because you were expecting something that was not ever promised or like even hinted at.
Whether we want changes, but like based yeah. upon their patterns. Right, like you can yeah, want something, nothing, but based upon their right? patterns, you shouldn't yeah. expect it. And yeah, maybe we've had this conversation before, so I don't want to get into yeah. it now. But
yeah.
Of whether they should be doing more regular changes and stuff like that. But I do want to come back to this tweet one last time, because there has been kind of one big piece of news related to Wild that has kind of persisted over the holidays, and it's not a very positive piece of news. Or something that you kind of want circulating around. But it's about this whole Ignite Mage cheating scandal, right? Yeah. So just to get out in front of this, the majority of the people that are out there that are playing Ignite Mage are not cheating. It's generally very, very clear when your opponent is. But I'll also link you guys to Corb's tweet. Like, Corb did a whole kind of Sherlock Holmes investigative reporting kind of
Thank you.
Piece on the cheating scandal. But
yeah.
For some reason, Hearthstone doesn't have kind of detection for altered game files like most games do, right? So I know FPSs and MOBAs, for the most part, they have a check where if you have altered their primary game files, you can't launch the game. I don't know if Hearthstone has that, but some way they are not able to detect the people that are cheating. And so therefore, we're having to rely on kind of community reporting of what's going on, which has led to some pretty angry outbursts from the community. You can argue whether it's deserved or not, but basically people are frustrated with the, you know, we don't have anything to compete in outside of ladder in Wild. We have nothing else that matters. And so when the competitive integrity of ladder gets kind of ruined by people cheating to rank one or win trading to rank one, it's causing some frustration. And because this is me completely reading into Cora's tweet here, where she says, you know, Warlock and Mage consistently powerful, they might make changes to Mage. My far out prediction is, because they can't detect this and to kind of get out in front of it, I could totally see them doing something like banning Ignite or nerfing Sorcerer's Apprentice to, you know, if you can't detect it and it's still a rampant problem, that's how they get around and solve that problem. It's a really, I'm going to say, crappy solution to the problem, but it is a solution out there. I don't know how you guys... I have my tinfoil hat on here and reading really, really deep into these tweets, but...
I think that the play pattern of the deck is maybe just something that they don't want anyway. Mm-hmm. So I think it's maybe a twofer in that regard, if that's even the case. Like, I don't... So I would say that... I would doubt that they're going to use players abusing mechanics or cheating by altering their game files as a reason to make a balance change. Like that doesn't seem likely to me, especially since, like, before we get too far into this, I do want to preface this with a bit of a reality check first. Like, the scale on which cheating is happening really kind of needs to to be brought up, because it is not rampant. It is a handful of players, unfortunately, at very high legend, abusing this and like achieving very high ranks that kind of like makes people think that it's happening a lot more than it is. And I think that that creates its own problems as well, because like I was telling Meowth before we even started the podcast today, somebody did 22 damage to me with a minion based ignite mage, and I have people in chat asking if they're animation cheating. And it, so like it creates this like witch hunty scenario where it's like, no, obviously that person wasn't cheating. That's like a very, you know, easy thing to do. I'm a boomer and I could have done that and then, like, you know, taken a few sips of coffee before I ran out of time. So it's like, you know, I think we need to be aware that the conversations that are being had of this and like I guess the way that it's being portrayed has an impact throughout, and like the scale on which it's happening is not very large. It's still a problem because like the deck that you know is clearly very powerful when you have a near infinite time to complete your actions, but like you know it's not nearly as rampant as what's going on, and it seems to be a handful of people at the very top of ladder. I think one good way to identify whether or not your opponent is cheating is which version of the deck that they're playing is like a pretty good indicator, because it Corb can correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like the spell based version with Stargazer Luna actually ends up being stronger. It's just limited by animations, so you can't as a human play it without having to cheat the animations, or not at the same level as you would with a minion based deck, because you have a little bit more time. The Chandler animation is a little bit faster than Stargazer Luna, so like you're playing a worse deck because you're not as limited by the animations as you are with the Luna deck. So I feel like if your opponent's playing the minion based version, like it's just a hard stop. They're probably not cheating right there. And then I don't know, it may be possible to complete all of the actions with the spell based Luna version to get a clean kill, but like for the most part, it is pretty apparent if and when your opponent is cheating, and I think your default assumption should be no, your opponent is not cheating, unless they do something outrageous.
There's a lot to like unpack there, probably on like a lot of different points. Firstly, I would like to just reiterate that, yeah, it's not this insane problem that's sweeping through ladder. Like, there are thousands and thousands and thousands of players every day. And, well, I can name off a handful of people. It is a handful of people, right? Like, it's a very, very, very small subset of a group that's really using this type of stuff. You know, there are maybe a couple dozen accounts that I know who either I recognize or people have reported and yada, yada, yada. So it is affecting a small portion. The thing is, the portion that it affects are the most engaged players, and it also affects a huge number of streamers, which in turn, like, passes this message around to a large percentage of people, basically, or a larger percentage of people who otherwise wouldn't be exposed to it, like the whole cheating situation. As for the, like, which deck is better, I honestly don't know, like, how good the deck really is if you use the cheats, because I'm not a cheat. Like, I've never had the chance to play against it. Like, I only get to face it, and it's incredibly frustrating. But the minion ignite version, it almost, in terms of, like, a practical sense, it doesn't actually matter, really, if the minion ignite mage is cheating or not, because you basically always get the 30 damage, like, regardless. And even if in matchups that you don't need to get the 30, like against Druid, they usually just kill you the next turn or two anyway, with a couple more ignites. So with minion ignite, it's almost irrelevant. It's basically just this spell ignite version that, you know, isn't really humanly possible to play very well if you don't have this animation speed up stuff. So, yeah.
So I guess my question is it, like, clearly the deck's good if people are getting rank 1 with it.
It has to be, right? Oh. Like, yeah, like, that's the thing.
Right, like, they wouldn't be using that deck. They're not...
they're not cheating. They're not cheating. Worst deck. Yeah.
Exactly. Right. They're yeah. So, yeah. But that means this deck must be, like, better than we estimated just, like, a baseline Ignite Mage could be, right?
Yeah.
Like it's very clearly a very strong deck if this is their choice for, like, they're going through all these hoops to cheat and play this deck, so it must be good if you have the, you know, the animations getting skipped. So, like,
yeah,
I mean, that's something to consider.
Yeah, yeah, and but again, it's hard to get an exact idea just because, right, you know, if you're not playing it. But yeah, you are right. Like, obviously, there's not really much point if it's just the same as whatever. As for, like, putting out the tweets and stuff, I felt very, conflicted about putting out this kind of information, because there are both like upsides and downsides of sort of flagging this stuff very publicly. Like, I felt kind of confident that when I put the tweets out, it would probably get a lot of attention. And the tweets did, like the tweets and Reddit posts got, you know, quite a lot of views and things like that. And the reason I'm kind of nervous about it is because it does kind of, in some ways, open people up to the possibility of cheating. And now people who might not have previously known are like, oh, now I can possibly go cheat. This is very much a bit of a last resort situation where basically players have been cheating a lot at high ranks since September. Like, it's going back to SnipSnap days, but basically with the print of Ignite, people really ramped up and it's slowly become a bigger and bigger issue. And yeah, there are lots of people at very high ranks who have been cheating very blatantly, who have admitted to it, who have screenshotted it. We have screenshots of them admitting to it. We have replays, we have VODs. It's very, very obvious and it's very, very clear. And they just keep queuing up on the ladder. Like, people have been reporting them. We were given the official email. And as far as I know, no one never really gets a reply from this email. And to be fair, maybe they're doing their own internal investigation. And maybe, you know, maybe that was all planned, that they have a certain time and they want to have a certain level of evidence of getting this problem at mass. But at a certain point, like, people have been cheating for months and months and months. And a player just finished rank one legend on all three servers in Wild, blatantly cheating. And it's just very much a frustration. They have done a ban, we know. I don't want to absolutely 100% confirm, but it seems to be the player Star Platinum, who was the player that I recorded and put on Twitter, because they were blatantly streaming it, very similar perhaps to how Jay was a standard player who was banned from esports because he streamed himself stream sniping. But apart from that player Star Platinum, it doesn't really seem like people aren't, you know, being banned. It doesn't really seem like people are being banned and taken off ladder. So, I don't know. Losing the people who are cheating feels really terrible. It's kind of a difference between this and I think the Jerry Rig animation, is that using any sort of third-party software that you otherwise shouldn't have access to feels unfair, especially when it is punishable and something that they are banning players for, which they weren't doing for something like a in-game bug. And they've made that kind of distinction clear. And so, yeah, it just kind of sucks, I think. And they've stated that their stance is not to comment on it publicly, but at a certain point, when an issue's been going on for months like this, not commenting and saying that your comment is "we don't comment" isn't really an appropriate response, I don't think. But
yeah, that's just me. So yeah, that's something that's like not exclusive to Hearthstone and not exclusive to Blizzard either. Like, gaming companies are notorious for like not really talking about their issues with you know, hacks and cheating and that kind of thing. And it, I don't know. I guess the reason is that they don't want like, you know, people to take measures to start avoiding it. They don't want to, like you said, publicize the fact that it's possible to even cheat. So like, but I don't know. It feels like it, from a PR standpoint right now, like you said, it's doing more harm than good. Like, saying nothing is kind of just making people more upset about the situation. And I think that you mentioned like the email, like not having an in-game report option is also kind of a problem for this. Not only for the, like, it's something that, you know, comes up every once in a while, where not only when somebody is cheating, but also just like the hate messages you get from from angry you know, rage ads and that kind of thing. That like, there are situations where like you need a way to report a bug or report a malicious player in the client. Now I'd say that, but I like, everybody that loses to Ignite Mage would report their opponent for yeah, cheating. That, so I can definitely see that going horribly awry. Yeah. So like, that would end up with the opposite problem of like over reporting. But like, at the same time, I don't know. Yeah, I imagine it does feel terrible to lose to somebody cheating. I remember when I was pushing for high ranks, it felt bad that, you know,
it was in snipers that, or something, right?
It was like, yeah, it was the snipers, yeah. Or yeah, it was you know, blatant win traders as well. And mm-hmm. like, it's, you know, it just feels like the effort that you're putting into that kind of goes to waste. Even if it's not as prevalent as you know, people seem, or some people in the community seem to think it is, like, it's still a problem, because like, even if it's just the handful of people doing it, like, it affects the people in that rank band with them on ladder, and that's like a substantial portion of people. That's a number that's in flux from day to day. And like, I don't know, rank one legend isn't achievable right now because it's being held down by somebody blatantly cheating. And that, like, that happened to me when I was like, I was pushing for rank one and somebody was so far ahead because they're actively win trading, and at another point somebody was like actively sniping anybody playing at high rank. So like, yeah, I understand that it feels bad, but like, I think that I don't know, some of the outrage is maybe a little bit overblown given the scale of it. Mm-hmm. Despite the fact that it is still obviously, you know, a problem. I don't know, like, I guess the last thing I'll say on this is that, like, the individual people that are delivering the message of "I can't talk about this" can't really do anything about that being the message that they have to go with. They can't break company policy and risk their job just because we want answers. And
yeah,
like, that's something to keep in mind, that it's not like this isn't a personal individual problem. It's a company-wide structural problem that, like, getting mad at those individual people doesn't accomplish anything. It's like getting mad at the person at the checkout line because they raised the prices. Like, that's not a reasonable thing to do. Don't do it. You can be irritated that, like, we're not getting information, and I wish we would. I think that the benefits outweigh the negatives, but, like, don't get mad at the people.
Yeah. I will say, like, it's funny, Meowth, like, kind of framed it as, you know, Sherlock Holmes at the very start. I will say, like, that is kind of the biggest point of frustration that I had, I think, is that this went on for months and then nothing actually happened until I posted it on Twitter, and then it was like 12 hours later, oh, don't worry, we've banned this person. And it's like, that person was streaming for over a month. Like, I know they've been reported because I'd reported them, and I'd reported them like well over a week before I tweeted it. I got no response. They were still doing it. Like, I had a link to their Twitter, to their stream and everything. And it feels so bad that we were told to report people to the same freaking email, and then all it took was a tweet to get like person banned. And that's not appropriate. Like, I shouldn't have to do that, and there shouldn't have to be a Google Doc showing a dozen plus people with VODs, with replays, with their tags, showing that they're cheating, and yet they're still on ladder. Like, I don't... it's just overall an incredibly frustrating thing. And it's, even if it's not any particular person, any individual person's sort of responsibility, or they're not, you know, in charge of it, there obviously are systemic problems with whatever the process is for these hacks, these cheating situations, and they need to be changed because it's really not good enough. And even if there are only like a couple people cheating a top legend, it still means that, you know, when there are only 300 top legends that you queue into, if there are like a dozen of them at 300, bam, you're queuing into one every hour. You're queuing into one every 40 minutes. Like, every time I stream, I queue into someone that's cheating, and it feels really shitty. So yep. I don't know. Makes me not want to play WoW, to be quite honest.
Anyways, that was a very dark ending. Very, very sad ending to a otherwise, I think, pretty good episode. So, sorry that we went there, but also not sorry that we went there. But Raffle Corbett, thank you so much for joining me in our first episode of 2022. Hope you guys enjoyed it. And, you know, let the people know where they can find you guys streaming Wild and Standard Hearthstone, apparently, this year.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at RaffleHS and Twitch and YouTube at Raffle.
And you can find me at Corbett Games on all those platforms. And yeah, thank you for listening / watching.
Yep. You guys can find me at GetMeOut on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube as well. And of course, just a reminder, you can find the podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, if you guys want to listen on the go. Thank you again for listening all the way to the end. We hope you guys have a good week, and we'll see you guys next time. Later.